Thank you to Joey and Sarah Bricker for sponsoring tonight's shiur or shiurim. I don't know what other shiurim are happening tonight, but at least ours. Le'ilo Nishmas, Bracha Bas Ruvain, Joey's mother, I believe. Maybe Sarah's mother, I don't remember. But her neshama shavet aliyah.
Amen.
Bracha Bas Ruvain. Okay, we are in the middle of the 28th chapter of Mishlei. I continue thinking about all the projects that I have in mind for Eish HaSchayil. The truth is, I was doing the math. We only have about maybe 12 weeks until 12 classes of Mishlei. Not necessarily 12 weeks, with you know, the Legends and Lessons and Pesach and Shavuos in the summer and whatever. So it could be another 4 or 5 months. I expect it to be around when school starts, something like that. But I've still got to get the wheels turning on what we're going to do for Eish HaSchayil. I have big plans, but sometimes big plans are a little too big. So let's see. We'll get there when we get there. Right now, we're on 28:16. Chaf Ches Tazayin, 28:16. Nagid Chasar Tvunos V'Rav Ma'ashakos. It's interesting the way that most Mefarshim explain this pasuk. It's that V'Rav Ma'ashakos is a result of Nagid Chasar Tvunos. Nagid, I don't know the word Nagid. Nagid is a leader. Nagid, it used to be like, it was almost like the exilarch. I don't know if people are familiar with that phrase. That's one of those Jewish history phrases, the exilarch. The exilarch was the Reish Galusa, the person in charge of the Jewish community in the diaspora. We don't really have them today, but they had them for many years in the post-Mishnaic period, all the way through the Gaonim probably, maybe even more, but the Nagid was one of the phrases used for that position. The person that would be the representative to the ruling power was called the Nagid. Either, I think, if I'm not mistaken, then the word Nagid was usually used by the Sephardim for that purpose. But okay, I'm not really sure. But here it says, Nagid Chasar Tvunot. If you have a leader who is lacking in understanding, lacking in some kind of bina, Virav Ma'ashakos. Virav sounds almost like, and he has a lot of, and he does a lot of. Ma'ashakot is like abuse, or in the art scroll it says plunder. Mezuzah Sion says gezel, theft. There are other ones here. No. That's all I got. But basically, he abuses the people, or he manipulates the people, he plunders the people. So, Nagid Chasar Tvunot, some explain it as one sentence, almost like someone who lacks understanding will plunder, which is an interesting way of understanding it. Either way, I think it means the same thing. Nagid Chasar Tvunot V'Rav Ma'ashakot. I would, if I were to read this pasuk without having seen that, I would have said that someone who rules as a Nagid, whatever that position is someone who is Chasar Tvunot and Rav Ma'ashakot. The problem with understanding it that way is that the second part doesn't really sound like that. But either way, Nagid Chasar Tvunot Rav Ma'ashakot. If someone is lacking understanding, and to their minds, and the way I see this, and, you know, I don't think this is clear in the pasuk, but the way that I see this is, a person of understanding is someone who knows, you know, what's going to sort of consequences of actions, but also long-term consequences. Someone who understands means someone who can sort of look beyond the present moment or the present material. Same bina is the ability to compare and contrast different things together. But the chasar tvunot means that they don't understand sort of maybe, I would say in the context, economic or strategic planning for their rulership, for their empire. So, therefore, Rav Ma'ashakos, therefore, because he lacks that long-term planning, he thinks, this leader, thinks that he has to make his way through plundering, right? Through, let's call it, you know, unjustified taxation, things of that nature. Okay. However, someone who is a sone vetza, Sone Vetza is someone who hates, I don't know how to translate money.
Yeah.
Here it says spoil. But...
spoils, yeah. Hates money. Yarich yamim. Betza is an interesting word. It also is, we have this in other places. I think Yisro uses that phrase also when he's appointing the judges. Sonei vatza, people who hate money. That's more in terms of like bribing and stuff like that. But the word betza, I once learned this from an Ivrit teacher in college. She was actually the granddaughter of the Torah Shlema, one of the big black books over there. The Rebbe Menachem Mendel Kasher, her name was, I forgot her first name, but her last name was Kasher Bendit. She kept her grandfather's last name. Anyways, so she explained that the word betza, if you find it in other places, means to cut. Right, we say by Shabbos Friday night, it says you should be botseya al kikar lechem. You ever heard the phrase breaking bread? So that's a Hebrew phrase. Botseya kikar lechem. Botseya lechem means to cut bread with each other. That's how they say it. The word botseya means to cut. So why is the word betza representative of money? So she explained because it used to be that when they made coins, they'd have these long logs of gold and they would just cut the coins out of this log of gold. So that's why she says betza means money, because that's how they used to. Okay, it's an interesting thesis, but not for me to decide if that's true or not. Sone betza yarich yamim is an interesting phrase because it does not seem to fully parallel the first part of the phrase, right? The first part was someone who's chasar tzvunos is also going to plunder, but then someone who hates money is going to live for a long life. We didn't say anything about the life of the Nagid the first time, right? We never said, Nagid chasar tzvunos rav mashakos mikatser yamim. We didn't say that a king or a ruler who manipulates people will have a short life. We never said that. So why is it the second time, sone betza yarich yamim, someone who hates hates spoils will lengthen their days? So I'm not really sure, but I believe some of the Mepharshim say, let me see here.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Sarita.
Oh, no, I was just saying, Sone Vetsa. Vetsa here. It's translated. I'm looking up. It says, hates greed.
Greed, yeah. Same type of thing. Financial aspirations. Trying to see where this is. I believe the point here is that the Nagid, his rulership will be short-lived. I thought I saw that somewhere.
Okay.
That's the whole point of the Nagid. The Yarich Yamin is not referring to life as much as it's referring to sort of the time period of their authority. Whereas the Nagid, Chasar Tzvun Rav Mashakol, will be short-lived. He will constantly be trying to plunder everyone and overtax people, and eventually he's going to get voted out. Or back then, he's going to be, you know, overthrown. But someone who's sone betza, someone who's not constantly trying to manipulate the people and get their money, so that person, yarech yamim, not in terms of their physical days, but in terms of their time in office, they will be sort of, you know, reelected over and over again, because that's the type of leader people like, people who aren't constantly looking for their money. If people look, you know, anyone who's going into politics for the sake of making money, so then you have to be worried about them. Right, there's all this talk about politicians and their stock trading and all this stuff. We don't have to go into that. But, you know, anyone who's plugged into the political scene knows what I'm talking about and how nefarious it is and how seemingly unethical it is. Somehow, their salaries are always in the six figures, but they end up coming out with eight figures. Uh-huh. That somehow, you know, through whatever deals they make, they end up with plenty of money. Unfortunately, that doesn't always equate to what this pasuk is saying, that that they get voted out. But you know, so is the world. Unfortunately, the sone betza is an interesting phrase. Sone betza. It's not good enough to just not have money or to not care for money. You have to actually despise it. You have to be on the lookout, because it's very easy, especially given the dividends of money. It's very easy, even if you're not against it, you will naturally be inclined towards it, right? You will, even if you're not someone who's like infatuated, or you have some people that are just like, they live their life to make money at the cost of all other things, including family, including values, including ethics, whatever. But then you have other people, I don't care so much for money, but it's nice. right? So that's what it's saying here. If you really want arichas yamim, now we could extrapolate this to other people also, beyond just people in positions of authority. But if you really want to, if you really want arichas yamim for either your position or your life, so then you really have to have a cognizance of, I don't want money. The money is evil, or it can corrupt. Money corrupts. So that's what I think it means here, that if you're, it's almost like, as they say, it's going up a down escalator. You've heard that analogy. If you're not going, if you're not actively fighting against it, you will go down, right? If you're not actively, you know, against money, so then it, well, it's only a matter of time until money gets you. Yeah, and you know, while this is said in a politician's perspective, we've talked about it in the past from a passions perspective, right? So I've talked in the past about Daniel Pink's book called, what's that book called? Drive, I think it's called Drive. Daniel Pink's book called Drive, where he discusses the unfortunate transition that all new college graduates go through. The college graduate, you know, graduates with a degree in whatever it is. But for the sake of bringing up some current event, which I think is very admirable, we'll talk about, you know, doctors. Doctors go to medical school, relevant, some, you know. Doctors go to medical school, and they're in it to save the world. And they just want to help people. And they have this drive, either pediatricians want to help the kids, or whatever it is, you know, your passion project that you want to help people in one way or another. And you go into the field, and you're excited, first semester, second semester, second year, you get to start doing clinicals, you get to actually start helping people. And then all of a sudden, you get married, and you have to get an apartment, and you have to buy a new car. And all of a sudden, the bills are stacking up, and you're sitting there looking at yourself, when am I going to get paid? You know, when am I really going to make some money? And instead of deciding, you know, I'll take a little less money so I can pursue my passion, you know, that thing that's been driving me in school this whole time, I'm going to take the other job, which is not exactly, doesn't exactly fit what I really want to do, but it makes a lot more money, right? So, I don't know, what do you, insert one of these doctors that you think don't, you know, have, no one has, who, I don't know, maybe people do. You know, I don't want to cast any aspersions, but I find it hard to believe that some people are passionate about dermatology. I just love taking care of people's skin. I love taking warts off of them and taking care of their poison ivy and their acne. Like, that's just, I've always wanted to help. So I find it hard, but whatever. It happens to me that I think most people are probably in it for the money. And if they're not in it for the money, after a certain point, they're in it for the money. And that's the point Daniel Pink makes, that we take these college graduates who are so full of passion and pursuing these lofty ideals and values, and all of a sudden the paycheck comes, and they have shifted their focus, not to the passion project, but instead to the paycheck, from passion to paycheck. And that's what I see here also, that if you really want arichas yamim, the Vilna Gaon interprets arichas yamim here not as literal lengthening of days, but as a richness of days. Your days will be longer, meaning you will cherish the moments that you have doing the things that you want to do. So whether that's referring to a ruler, a nagid, or that's referring to someone in their own position, that's pursuing a passion project, to maintain the sone betza of life, to maintain that perspective that I'm not doing this for the paycheck, is not easy. But if you can overcome that, so then, yarich yamim, your days will be full. They will be longer. You will look back after each day and say, wow, that was a long, fulfilling day. As opposed to someone who looks back, and we've all been here, we look back and it's like, what did I do today? Now you look back and you're like, I feel like I didn't do anything today. And that's because, I think, you didn't make any new memories. The memories were all the same. You did the same thing you did yesterday and blah, blah, blah. And therefore, it wasn't a passion of yours to see that patient. It wasn't a passion of yours to have had that conversation with a colleague of yours. It wasn't a passion to do this project, that project. and therefore just gets rolled into all the other stuff you do because you're just not, it's not connected to some kind of passionate pursuit. So that's why it's yarich yamim, your days will feel longer. I once asked my dad, because he said that when I was a kid, my dad used to say that time flew by. Mm-hmm. I said, what do you mean that 60 yeah. seconds is 60 seconds? Yeah. Whether I'm, 10 years old or you're 35 years old, 60 seconds, 60 seconds. I said, do you mean to tell me that time actually moves faster for you? And he said, yes, it does. So it doesn't actually. But I think as a child, you have this sense of wonder and curiosity of what the next moment will bring. And as a grown-up, you kind of get into your routine and you know what's coming. And therefore, there's not the same kind of cherishing of moments, for better and for worse. I think sometimes you don't want to cherish moments that are, difficult moments. You want those to pass by faster, but whatever. That's what the Vilna Gaon explains, apparently, on this word, sone betza yarach yamim. If you can, if you can dissociate your passionate pursuits from your paycheck, so then your days will be lengthened. You will look back at your days and feel more fulfilled. And that's I think, a very worthwhile reminder. And just coming back to the medical thing, did people see this unbelievable act of generosity for Albert Einstein Medical School?
Yeah.
Yeshiva really Universities?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. $1 billion. $1 billion so that medical school students can go to medical school for free.
Too late for us.
I know, I was going to say, I've got friends that went there, you got everyone that went there, I know. A little too little too late, yeah. It says in perpetuity, but I don't really know. I mean, $1 billion is going to run out at some point. If you think about medical school costs is what, a couple hundred thousand?
Yeah.
So that's, five of those is a million. So you're talking about 5,000 students can go for free, which is a lot. I'm not saying that's not a lot, but, that's, that's not perpetuity. I guess you can make more money out of it. That's true. That's true for sure. Anyways, unbelievable. Who was the name there?
Gottesman,
that's right. Gottesman. And they're not changing the name of anything, mm-hmm. which was, I saw, that was like the bigger, that was the bigger chop of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm giving $1 billion and I don't want my name attached to it. That is true generosity. They don't want their name on the building. They don't want their name even again on the scholarship. They just gave the money. And that's, anyways. So some people will have hopefully, a better sone betza prospect. They'll have a better ability to hate the money when they don't have to be tied to it, at least while they're in medical school. So, wow, huge, huge kindness. I guess, as they say, or as they used to say, I don't know what their tagline is, YU has a new tagline every year or so. When I was there, at the end of my time there, they used to have a tagline, only at YU or something like that. So anyways, that makes me think of that. Only at YU, $1 billion donation so that medical school students can go for free. Only at YU. Okay. Although I think there was a whole thing after Madoff, they changed the auspices of everything. It's not really YU's. It's sort of like lent to YU. I don't remember. There's a whole arrangement there. Pasuk Yud Zayin. I don't know why the Dalit here is small. There's got to be something to it. I'm sure you were going to ask me. I do not know why it's small. I don't know. Adam Ashuk B'dam Nefesh. Adam Ashuk B'dam Nefesh. Arebor Yanus Al Yismechuvo. The person who's guilty of bloodshed. I wonder if the Dalit, the small Dalit, is meant to sort of say also Im as opposed to Adam. Just take the Dalit out. I don't know. A person who is Ashuk B'dam Nafesh Ad Bor Yanus Al Yismuchuvo. Here it says, you go to the grave, no one will support him. Al Yismuchuvo does not sound like a perspective. It doesn't sound like a descriptive. It sounds like a prescriptive. Al means don't. Don't rely on him. That's how I would have said it. I don't know. I don't see anyone saying it that way, but the pasuk means basically someone who is guilty of murder. I don't know if people see these true crime shows. I know I've mentioned that I've watched them. That these true crime, these people get away with, or think they get away with murder, and then they travel to some, you know, far off place where nobody's going to find them. They always find them. Well, the truth is, they never make documentaries about the ones they don't find. They only make documentaries about the ones they do find. So I can't tell you that no one finds them. But the point is that those people, and this is where the Ibn Ezra comes in. I don't have the Ibn Ezra in front of me, but it's a fascinating commentary. Oh, I do. I don't know how very rarely quote from the Ibn Ezra here, but the Ibn Ezra quotes in this pasuk. He says, "Adam ashuk badam kemo oshik v'chein agor kemo oger hashduda kemo shodeda." Fine, he goes through. Umishu oshik badam nefesh wrote seach. Someone who is who abuses others and kills. Avonosav yivyehu letzara. His sins will bring him to sorrow. His sins will bring him to sorrow. Avonosav yivyehu letzara. Sheyelech el habor lahamis nafsho ulhashlich b'makom ra v'lo yimtza mi she mi yashivenu. Hold on. Yeah. So he gives the other more conventional understanding. The more conventional understanding is this guy's going to be running for his life his whole life. People are going to be looking for him. He's going to be taking on new identities. He's going to change his hair color. He's going to whatever. He's going to take on these, and he's going to, that's what it means. Yanus el bor. He's going to be running away to hide. Bor is a pit. He's going to be running away to hide. The other option is Yanus el bor means he's going to go to his death. The Ibn Ezra actually sounds like this person wants to kill themselves. But the more important, obviously that's important, but the more operative interpretation, part of the interpretation of the pasuk, is that he's saying, Avonosav yivyeh letzara, sheyelech el bor lahamis nafsho lahashlich makom ra. That the person, after doing something so terrible, is so unwilling to admit his mistake, he's just going to live with it, and he's going to be, he's going to torture himself his whole life. You know, you do something wrong, and it's the type of thing you can't admit to anyone, and therefore it just weighs on you and weighs on you and weighs on you. And your conscience at some point can't take it, especially for this kind of, you know, heavy activity of actual murder. So says Ibn Ezra, this guy is not going to be able to live with himself. He's going to be so distraught over his own actions that he can't talk to anybody about, and he's going to have to somehow live with it. So, just because this is relevant to the pasuk, you know, talking about the true crime podcasts or the true crime documentaries, I don't recommend them to people who are, you know, have bad dreams and stuff like that. I rarely remember any of my dreams, but I don't know if I dream about them or not. But the favorite ones, my favorite ones, even though they're sometimes the saddest ones, are the cold case. Mm-hmm. The cold case, you know, we couldn't figure this out until DNA evidence, and we still have the old clothes and whatever. Like that I find to be most dramatic. You have this guy who's been, or girl, who's been living, thinking to themselves that they got away with it. And then 30 years later, the DNA evidence comes out, and they're able to figure it out. And then this person's like shocked. They like didn't even know that they could be found out, and he had his whole new life and whatever. And you just think about these people, assuming they have some semblance of a heart, which is hard. You know, sometimes these people do terrible things, but assume they have some kind of heart. How do they sleep at night? And I mean that not in terms of like, how could you? I can't, you know, I mean that like they must sleep terribly. They must have something so heavy on their hearts that who knows how they lash out at people? Who knows how they mistreat people? Because they have such a heavy burden that they're carrying inside, unless they're absolutely heartless.
They just go back to leading normal lives. It gets past them.
So they have to have something. It's very, very strong compartmentalization tactics. Like, dissociating from the previous person.
Did Nazis kill people and go home to their wives and kids and disassociate from it?
Yeah, that's true.
You thought the victim was? not a right. human being.
Right. Yeah, no, so you justify it away somehow.
Yeah, you justify.
Right. Interesting. Anyway, so that's that person. That's what Ibn Ezra says. That could also be the meaning of the pasuk. A person like this will be just so burdened by his previous acts that he himself won't want to live anymore because of how difficult it is to live with himself. Again, you know, some people that are monsters that don't think like that. But al yismuchuvo. The Ibn Ezra sounds like what that means is don't help him either until he admits what he did or something like that. I don't know how you do that, but the next pasuk is something that we've seen before and is actually almost a perfect repetition of another pasuk. Let me just see. I think I saw someone quoted as Yud Beis Yud Aleph. Let me see how close it is. Yud Beis Yud Aleph. That's 12:11. Pasuk there says. Oh no, that's the next pasuk. Sorry, I'm looking at. I'm thinking of Yud Tes. Yeah, this is also a familiar pasuk. But Holech Tamim Yivashaya, someone who walks straight, Tamim is perfect or straight. Yivashaya will be saved, but Vineakash Tamim also could be innocent. Vineakash Drachayim Yipol Ba'achas. We've used this word before. The word Drachayim. I know Trina, you maybe have started sharing something. I don't know why. But I'm not exactly sure what you're doing there. But the pasuk Derachayim, Derachayim is interesting. It doesn't say Derachim. It doesn't say Ya'akesh Derachim, that they are going to sort of, you know, go wayward to different directions, plural. It says Derachayim, meaning Ne'akash Derachayim is they will sort of oscillate between two paths. And I think the last time we used this word, we said a similar interpretation. But Drachaim could mean that you're on some kind of road. Imagine just sort of like you can go in the middle of the road or you can go on either side of the road. And that's a bad example because we're supposed to go on either side of the road. But my point is, let's say it's a one-way street and you're deciding I'm either going to go in the middle, which is where you should be, or on this extreme, or on that extreme. So Drachayim means two derechs, two paths. So maybe that's what it means, that a person is going wayward to one of the two paths. So that means Yipol Pe'echas. And I find this to be very informative, very insightful to the world we live in. I don't know why. I mean, I have my theories, and I can talk from today to tomorrow about these theories. But the world is especially, in anything that's sort of like a public debate, polarizes itself. In religion, you don't find it as much, but it happens a lot in religion also. So for instance, conservative Judaism, even though once upon a time it was seen as if it was going to be the future of all Judaism, mm-hmm. is now, you know, the waistband of history. If you're a conservative Jew, it's basically only a matter of time, you know, excuse anyone who's listening who's conservative, but it's only a matter of time until that whole, you know, cohort becomes reform. I mean, conservative Judaism has just been chiseling away at the only things that they've held on to over time, whether it's women rabbis, or it's driving on Shabbos, or it's keeping kosher in the home, or whatever it is, you know, they just chisel and chisel and chisel. Eventually, it's just going to become reform. You know, whether because there's nothing left, sort of judiciously, there's nothing left in terms of what halacha you're following, or just because if you chisel so much away, so then what do you even stand for, right? If you're going to be so welcoming, so then what do you even stand? There's a lot of gradation inside of conservative Judaism, so I'm not going to speak to it because, first of all, I don't know about it, but also there are different levels. But the point is, they wanted their cake and eating, they wanted to eat it too. They wanted to say that we can reform, but we can also stay connected to religiosity, to certain traditional aspects of Judaism. And I think that modern Orthodoxy struggles with this too. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've talked about this in the past. If modern Orthodoxy means I'm going to take some secular culture and some halacha, so then count me out, right? Modern Orthodoxy doesn't mean, you know, sacrificing halacha for the sake of being in the modern world. It means doing both, right? To me, modern Orthodoxy, or whatever that means, You know, it means to me, it means having both and being serious about both. Being serious about halacha and being serious about being a real, sincere, authentic contributor to the secular world. You're right, in terms of professions and you know, whatever it might be, donations to important charities, or, you know, the best doctor that you can be, or the best lawyer, or the best, you know, social worker, whatever it is, right? That you should take that job seriously. It's not just a means to an end, but it's an important means itself. So that's how I view modern orthodoxy. But I think in terms of how some people view it, it's like, oh, this is just the lenient orthodoxy, right? Modern means not so, right? Modern orthodox, right? So if that's how we're viewing it, so then, first of all, I don't want any part of that. But also, I think it's only a matter of time until those people's children will ultimately not be frum. They're not going to be. You're not going to be religious if you're willing to go. You're willing to move off of sort of the straight and narrow. And I think that, in coming back to my original point, that's what I mean by polarizing. Mm-hmm. Everyone, it seems, in this world is going either one direction or the other. Think about politics. You're either Republican or you're Democrat. It is unbelievable. One of the least believable things, literally, I mean that literally, it's hard to believe that any conscious thinking person that analyzes every issue always ends up either Republican entirely or always ends up Democratic entirely. It's impossible. There are so many issues in the world. Now, you can make risk-benefit calculations, right? So, for instance, if you want to say halacha dictates that A, B, and C are what we should align with, you know, the Republican Party, but B and D align with the Democratic Party, I'm not saying that any of this is true or not true, I'm just saying, if you wanted to say that, so then you can make a calculated decision. Okay, you know, I don't want to, but I'll hold my nose and vote Republican, right? But to say, and people do this way too much, to say, oh, the Republican Party is the party of religiosity, therefore everything the Republican Party says must be halachically valid. What? Mm-hmm. What? Yeah. Since when? Just because we value the First Amendment means therefore I should always be carrying a gun? Now, you might believe that there's a value in carrying a gun, but don't pin that on Judaism, right? Don't pretend, oh, it's a Republican thing, it must be Jewish. Yeah. And I think a lot of people conflate the two. And that's because we've been polarized. We are all polarizing. We're either going all the way to the right or we're going all the way to the left, religiously or, and that's what I mean by the loss of conservative Judaism. Because at a certain point, the way that the world works, unfortunately today, is nobody, very few people are able to sort of hold the ground. Hold the middle ground. You're either going all the way to the right and becoming super yeshivish and Haredi, or you're going all the way to the left and becoming super assimilated and secular. Now, obviously, there's a lot of people in the middle. The question is, are they moving in one way or the other? And that's a very, very difficult line to stay, but I think that's what you see in this pasuk. Holech tamim yivashaya, someone who can hold that line and say both things are important. We don't have to entirely, you know, dismiss secular culture, and we don't have to entirely dismiss halacha. We should be able to do both seriously. And someone who says that, you know, I have to agree with everything with, you know, the Republicans say or everything Democrats say. So that's also, you're just going to the sides. That's nak nek hashdrachayim, yipol ve'echas. If you are swerving Ne'akash derachayim between two poles, if those are the only options, yipol v'yachas, you're going to eventually fall down in one of them. Either you're going to fall down, meaning be unsuccessful, because you've become way off the deep end this direction or that direction. Whichever direction you go, they're both bad. They're both bad if we become so polarized. And I think that's where you find a lot of the difficulty today. Jonathan Haidt talks about this a lot in his book called The Righteous Minds. You find today that people can't even talk to each other. You can't even talk to each other. Some guy, you saw this, some guy lit himself on fire to protest Israel? Like,
American soldiers.
How crazy do you have to be? Yeah. Like, how off, you know, talk about yipol ba'achas. Someone you know, going, falling off the deep end to one extreme. So that's, the guy's crazy. The guy is crazy. And that's the type of stuff that you really find is just like, how do you get to that point? But it's because of the way, again, I don't want to get into all my different theories about how this happens, but all of this information is just coming at us and people are just categorizing it so quickly and saying, oh, this is a good thing, that's a bad thing, this is a good thing, it's a bad thing. And in order to get people's eyeballs, the people say more and more outlandish things, right? So that they can get that side of the aisle's attention. So things just get more outlandish and outlandish to get people's attention. And eventually those things just become the sort of the standard two poles that you can gravitate towards. And nobody's just like staying in the middle and saying, wait a second, that's crazy and that's crazy. You know, I'm looking at two sides of crazy. But that's what Ne'akash Jerachayim, that if you pervert your ways, those two ways specifically, to either pole, it's not going to be good. And that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam tells us famously, I believe it's in Hilchos Deos, that there is nothing, besides two things, there is nothing that is meant to go in any extreme. You want to be charitable? Don't be crazy charitable. Don't give away all your money. You want to be stingy? So don't keep all your money. Have a compromise. Give some of it to people, but also take care of yourself and your family, right? And same thing with other character traits. He says the two exceptions to the rule are anger and gaiva, haughtiness. And even those two, there are exceptions to them being exceptions. There are moments where even the Rambam says you're allowed to present as angry. Easier said than done. But and then there are moments where you should be a little haughty. The Gemara says you have a shmini sheva shminis of chutzpah. A person should be 1/8 of 1/8 of chutzpah. So they can ask questions. If a person didn't have any chutzpah, they'd never ask a question. Right? Right, so that kind of thing. Either way, so that's the fear or the risk, the threat of polarization, and I think Jonathan Haidt talks about it very well in the book called The Righteous Mind. Oved Admaso Yisbalachem, this is the one that sounds very similar to something we've talked about in the past. Someone who works his field will be sated by bread. But Umurad Evrekim Yisbarish, someone who is chasing after emptiness will be sated by poverty. This is a very interesting two phrases. First of all, Oved Admaso Yisbalachem. There are two interesting nuances here. First of all, someone who's working the field. So the Gemara tells us, if somebody claims, Lo Yagati Matsasi, I didn't put any work in, but I was successful. Or if they claim, Yagati Velo Matsasi, that I put a lot of work in, I was not successful. So you don't believe them. If, however, they say, Lo Yagati Velo Matsasi, if they say, I didn't do any work, and I didn't find any success, you can believe that, right? And also, if they say, Yagati Matsasi, I put in a lot of work, and I was successful, so then you believe them too. Because the success, and this is my touch of that Gemara, I'm sure others say it also, the success is defined by how well you work. Not based on the result, but the Yegiyah itself is the success. Okay, I'm not going to get into that right now. But here what you find is, Oved Admaso Yisbalachem, if you put the work into your field, if you put the work in, and you're able to get a loaf of bread out of it, whether that means literally you make the bread because of the wheat that you harvested, or because you worked hard, you had your desk job, and you went down the street and you bought a loaf of bread, so you will be sated by that. You will feel good about that piece of bread because you worked for it, as opposed to getting a handout. The handed out food tastes a lot worse. Or it doesn't taste, it's not as gratifying, as satisfying as the stuff that you worked for. Right? And this is why lottery winners always go broke within 5 years. You know, this is the same type of thing. The parent makes the kid work for their, work for their allowance.
Do you want to go against the one we start off the evening? A one will hate squirrels, will prolong his days. If you're working hard,
you're working
for money. You're working.
Oh, he doesn't say that he's doing it for money. It says someone who works hard will be satisfied by the bread that they eat. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that they're working so they get the bread that they eat. Now, they might be, in which case, yeah, it wouldn't be as Sony Betsa as you think. You're right. This could be abused. This could be a problem of the first pasuk, but it's not clear that it would be. Someone who's working for work's sake, because it's important to work, and it's important to put in effort, and it's important to make for the value, the intrinsic values of the work, as opposed to the ultimate, you know, reward of the money. So then someone who's working for the intrinsic value, that is satiating. You'll feel good because you worked hard. Umaradev Reikim, however, someone who's chasing after empty things, if you are pursuing them. Maradev is an interesting word because it almost sounds like you never get there. Reikim is an interesting word because it sounds like you're chasing nothingness. But clearly what it means is, Reikim, things that aren't valuable. You're chasing valueless things. And you're chasing them because you never get there, right? If the things that you're chasing are not substantive, so you will never get there. Miradef is in the present tense. You're always going to be chasing, right? So, you know, the classic example is the fancy car. You've been saving up for the fancy car. You've been chasing after getting this fancy, whatever, Tesla or whatever it is. I don't know what the fanciest car is today. But you get that car, and then all of a sudden, the next day, another car comes out, right? And you're Miradef. You're going to start chasing again. Right, because you're chasing after empty things, things that aren't intrinsically valuable. They're extrinsically valuable based on culture and based on trends and based on other people and whatever. So then, what is satiating to them? So this is the interesting part I found about this pasuk. So first, I never said the other interesting nuance of the first part of the pasuk. Oved is not just oved adama, and not just someone who's working in the field, but oved adama. So it's got to be your own field, working for somebody else. It's not so satisfying. Working for yourself, and the way I'm going to interpret working for yourself is not I'm self-employed, but I'm going to interpret it to mean I'm doing this work because I want to do it. Mm-hmm. Meaning I value the work that I am doing. Then it's your work. Then it's your field that you're working, as opposed to I'm doing it because so-and-so told me. Right? That's Oved Adama Shel Acher. That's working somebody else's field. So then you're not satisfied because if you're looking at it like that. Right, this is the three bricklayers. I quoted this from Angela Duckworth in the past, maybe not in a long time. The three bricklayers analogy that she brings up in her book called Grit. It way predates her. It's not her analogy, but yeah. Right. There are three bricklayers, you know, building a wall. You go to the first one, you ask him, what is he making? And he says, oh, I'm building a wall. You go to the second one, he says, oh, I'm building a building. And you go to the third one, and he says, I'm building a resting place for God. Right, they're building a synagogue or something like that. So each one of them are doing the exact same thing, but they're all working for different things. Right, the first guy is just working because he's got a job. Second guy is working because he wants to create something special. The third guy is working because he has a purpose. Right, that purpose is driving his work. So that's Oved Adma. So if you really believe in the work that you're doing, so then you're working your own field. So that's I want to just point that nuance. But if you go back to the second, you know. The second phrase, Miradev Reikim, someone who's chasing this emptiness, Yisbarish. I do not really know what Yisbarish means. It is a oxymoron to be sated by poverty. Right? Poverty means you are, by definition, unsatisfied. That you're poor. So I want to say Yisbarish is either it's like a euphemism, I mean it doesn't mean you're satisfied, but you're gonna have to deal with poverty. That's what it means. You know, poverty will be your lot, but not that you'll be literally satisfied. Alternatively, and this is, you know, I want to put sort of like the heavy homiletics, caveat here. I don't think this is what the pasuk means, but I think you can darshan into this pasuk. Yisbarish means the only time you will ever be satisfied is when you hit rock bottom. Maybe that's what it means. Yisbarish, you will feel satisfied, meaning you will, I guess, recalibrate your values in life only once you're really, truly poor. As long as you've got the money and you've got the resources to keep chasing empty things, so you're going to keep chasing. But it's only once you're actually poor, that's when you'll be satisfied to know this is not what life's about. Yisbarish, you'll be satisfied when you become poor. Again, it's heavy homiletics. I don't think that's what the pasuk literally means. But I do think that that's a worthwhile message, which fits in line with the previous one. The person who works for their keep, so they will be satisfied even with the smallest amount because they worked for it. But the person who's just chasing and chasing, they'll never be satisfied with anything that they do or pursue. And the only thing that will sort of get them to change and truly be satisfied is when they become poor and they will hit rock bottom and realize that what they're doing this whole time is not really is not going to make ends meet internally. Make ends meet. Mm-hmm. Okay, last pasuk for today. 38:51. But ish emunos rav brachos va'atzla hashir lo yinaka. I could have sworn that I know this pasuk from a medrash about truma. Ish emunos rav brachos, but I don't know this for sure. The literal meaning of the pasuk mean is a man of emunah, which here could be translated as a religious man, which I'm sure Rashi talks about. Or it means, oh, Rashi quotes about Meiser. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Rashi says, "Hanosin ma'as rosa be'amuna she'ein aid b'davar ela kadosh baruch hu reo amar be'lo bracha." No, that's not what I was thinking of.
You're using integrity, but I mean, emuna, you're right.
Right, emuna means integrity in this context, meaning a person that's playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look this pasuk up quickly because it's going to drive me a little crazy. I think I've even used this in a drasha before, this pasuk. Ish emunos rav brachos v'atz l'ha'ashir l'inakeh. What is v'atz? One impatient to be rich will not be exonerated. Let me see here. I'm going to try to do this quickly with the computer. I'm only going as quickly as my computer right now. But no, thank you. Should I just type it in? Let's see. The art scroll translates that a man of integrity will increase blessings. And their first explanation from the Ibn Ezra is basically that people think that honesty, you know, the honest person finishes last, right? You've heard that one? You know, you gotta cut some corners in order to make money. So that's what it's saying here. Ish emunos rav brachos. It's the person that is faithful, that is a person of integrity. That's the person that will get all the blessing, who will make the money. Okay, Mishle. 28 pasuk 20. Let's see, the moment of truth. Only four people have recorded it. It's not me. Let me see, Medrash Bereishis Rabba. Is that what I'm looking for? No, that's not it. I don't think. Is it? I don't know. I have to look deeper into this. Shmos Rabba. That sounds more familiar. El Pukudi Mishkach Pasul Rabbi Rana Bar Av Ishem Nes Rabbi Brachos Ata Motzak Kol Mishu Neman Hakadosh Baruch Hu Maybe Brachos Hayadav Mishenan Em Atzla Asher Lo Yinake Ishem Nes Moshe. No, this is not exactly what I'm thinking about. All right, I'll have to look at it later. But there is a version of this that I'm thinking about. Ish emunos rav brachos, someone who is of integrity, ultimately blessing. So, as we often say, this could either be interpreted in a convention. What's the word I'm looking for? Rational way, mm-hmm. Or in a spiritual way. Ish emunos rav brachos means someone of integrity. Who maybe, you know, as they used to do in the beginning of the 20th century, get fired for their jobs every Friday because they say, I'm not coming in on Shabbos, mm-hmm. Right? That person with integrity, Hashem will bless them, right? We don't know how, we don't know where, we don't know when. They'll be blessed, Hashem will take care of them. That's the spiritual, metaphysical understanding of it. The rational way of understanding it is more that a person of integrity will, first of all, be honest, and people will start to trust you, right? This is Adam Grant's great thesis in his book, Give and Take, that if you're a giver, people understand that you're a good person, as long as you're not a pushover. So then people will start to trust you, and the blessings will start to come. But Va'atzla Ha'ashir, someone who's quick to try to just get a quick buck, right? In Adam Grant's case, talking about Ken Rich, he'll cut the corners, he'll be fake, and he won't do it properly. Lo yinakeh, he will ultimately be found out, and he will not be absolved of his wrongdoings. People will find you out, one way or another. Eventually, you know, we're going to figure out what Madoff did. Eventually, we're going to figure out what Ken Rich did, or all the people that have all these money schemes to get rich quick, right? Atzla ha'ashir lo yinakeh, which comes back to the original pasuk we did today. So nevetza yarech yamim. You want lengthening of your time? So then, don't chase after the money. Eventually, people will respect you. Eventually, people will honor you, give you the proper trust that you've earned, and thereby you will have longevity. You won't get the quick, cash, payout that you're looking for, but you'll get the long-term stability and the long-term security, financial security too, by being a good person. So it might take more time, but in the long run, it'll help you out and work out in your favor, as opposed to the other version, the Nagid Chaser Tvunos, the ruler who's trying to sort of plunder and make a quick buck and keep his power, as they, that's that line Russell Crowe says in Gladiator, the time for honoring yourself will soon be at an end. I don't know if that's an exact quote, but it's pretty close. It's close. If you look it up, it's pretty. The time for honoring yourself will soon be at an end. That's the point. You're right. You're just gobbling up all the ways that you can prop yourself up. Ultimately, that's going to do you in. And the lack of authenticity, the lack of honesty, is ultimately going to be repaid in kind. Okay. Meshav, good night. Thank you again to the Brickers for sponsoring. Le'ilan Nishmas, Brach Vas Ruvain, Her Neshama, Shav and Aliyah.
Thank you.